Morning, Andy.
Good morning, Graham. How are you?
Good, good.
Wonderful. It's a bit tasty out there, I dare say. Have you set foot out the door yet?
No, it's freezing.
Thank you very much for the weather forecast. I need it. This isn't scheduled, Graham, but I wonder if I could just, as someone who's not particularly enamoured of the whole tinsel bit, particularly this year, I'm wondering if I could ask for your take as a designer on the what post-Victorian apprehension of Christmas that we always seem to have. Do you think that this fits the tone of the times, and could it be done differently? Are you a fan, indeed?
Well, big question. Changing the whole culture.
Well, I mean, I think you're the man for the job, but some people say, I think it's a bit of a seasonal complaint, rather like the weather, isn't it? That it's all too much, it's all too soon, and it all looks a little bit tacky.
Yeah, it's definitely getting more and more tacky, and it's being accepted by more and more countries around the world now.
It's
And
sort of it culturally, it's a sort of as it were, low key Christianization, isn't it, I suppose. This I wasn't aware of. Yeah,
well,
because you travel a bit, this place, that's Singapore, haven't you, and China and wherever else.
Well, it's a commercial. It's
It's the bottom line, isn't it?
marketing thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why it starts so early. goes on for a month
Around about August these days,
or
I think, isn't
more.
it? Somebody offered me a hot cross bun the other day, and presumably that wherever they're grown offshore, they've shipped across many a mile. But there should be regulation, surely.
Well, it was just all. I think social media led by Trump is committing the world to commit suicide, basically.
So, in a sense, there is a sort of people often talk about overindulgence in America, don't they? The canned chicken off the quadruple heart bypass in their 30s, that a former a colleague of mine's partner beset themselves with. That sense that the which people compare to the last days of Rome, of overindulgence. Thanksgiving, segue Christmas, I suppose, is a factor, but you think this is particularly coming to a head under Trump. Are you linking it with Christmas, or are you linking it with the political weather, the sort of mafiosi political weather?
Well, it's all coming together. It's the three waves or more coming together into global warming, basically. It's including things like diet, for instance, affecting health. So we're getting increase in health problems, which is stopping people work, which is stopping production, which is
There was a big
making
obesity
more and more
drugs,
poverty.
obesity consequent drug scandal, wasn't there? A class action, successful class action in America a couple of years ago. Yeah, sorry, you were saying yes. Yeah, it's so. Yeah, I also have this image, I suppose, of Musk's cars on the White House lawn, and Trump sort of doing a Nicholas Parsons sale of the century, as it were. It reaches the point where it's sort of in your face. And sorry, that's rather an unpleasant image for this time of the morning, isn't it? But the raw commercialism with no filter.
Well, it's Trump and corporatism of America.
And the celebration, as it were, of inequality and, in quotes, aspiration, at least to say, over here in the 80s.
Trump has turned America into a corporation that's just doing deals around the world. He's not a politician. He's a company director. He's a businessman. So he's just not doing the politics.
It limits the, I suppose, the terms and conditions of any peace deal he might accomplish. I mean, there was one yesterday, wasn't there, in Washington, at something called the Institute for Peace, attended by, I suppose, by the Department for War, irony bypassed, with regard to the ongoing shenanigans in the Congo, which I gather was very mineral rich.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, the tech industry is dependent on Congo.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Why not
But
just say this? Because it's quite clear that someone like that is not over there for the benefit of their health, or I suppose possibly the longest for the Nobel Peace Prize again.
yeah, that's ironic. I don't think it's for
Well,
the Peace Prize.
if they call it the
he's,
Nobel
he's
War Prize, it'd be front of the queue, wouldn't it?
no, he's preventing Ukraine winning the war.
Yeah.
He's blocking Ukraine to the benefit of Russia.
They're not in the negotiations, and the latest best hope is for something where which would effectively be Putin hanging on to, and I think extending his land grab.
Yeah, as a corporation, America Corporation.
And I suppose you could say that in a sense Russia is that now because of the network of oligarchs that are in the funding pool.
Exactly. Well, I think the corporates are taking is the fossil industry. Is the big corporation that Putin and Trump head. With Saudi Arabia, and are just bullying the rest of the world to commit suicide.
It's a disturbing seasonal thought, but it effectively that's the zero sum game, isn't it? And we gather that, or are reminded of the fact that Russian oil supplies to the EU are being phased out and will conclude in 2028.
Yeah, that's why he sees Europe as a competitor,
Yeah.
because they're not accepting oil or gas.
Well, we are, but not quite so much of it, I suppose. But
Well,
in a sense, it's these
phase
things
out.
are,
We're phasing out
yeah.
by 2027. So that's what Putin's originally objecting to. That's why. It's the Ukrainians blew up the gas pipeline, wasn't
Yeah. Well, I
it?
think there's been certainly there's that nuclear plant at Srebrenica, isn't there? Which, if I remember rightly, and some major pollution that's been caused by on the Russian side of their facilities. It all seems so maddeningly toxic, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, and the permafrost is melting in Russia,
Mm.
but Putin's just cordoning it off because they have access problems. They can't get access. The earth is melting, but it's releasing all the methane, which is 60 times worse than carbon dioxide.
Pre-Putin, did you have any dialogue with the Russian climate scientists? I mean, what is their permitted perception of the situation?
Well, there's that wonderful scientist in Siberia building his science park.
And the menagerie, and as it were, the revival of ancient species to nurture and tend it.
Yeah, he had his paper published in Nature.
Yeah.
The theory that it was all the animals, the millions of species. In the Arctic, that
Adapted to those very harsh conditions, I suppose rather less harsh or more harsh, depending
well, the
on how you're
woolly
set
mammoth,
up.
yeah, the
Yeah.
woolly mammoth, yeah, get the
We do have the odd one in West Croydon, it has to be said, or apparently so, yeah, but they are rare, yeah.
yeah. Well, it's a very long process, but it allowed the permafrost. To penetrate, but now the animals have gone. It's the permafrost isn't penetrating, and the sun. So the sun is warming the permafrost and melting the earth. So they releasing the carbon, the methane.
Is
mean,
this ex
you can set light to the Earth in the Arctic, in many
Wouldn't that
places.
be fun? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of fires are just spontaneously. The Earth is burning up. It's all
Yeah,
flooding up.
it has. Apparently, this is. It's hard to believe on a morning like this, but this has been one of the warmest years on record, certainly since the records began, hasn't it? In this towards the end of the Industrial Revolution.
Well, I think the last 10 years have been the warmest on record. Each year is it gets warmer.
I mean,
Yeah.
that's very relative in Siberia, but the extreme conditions there. As with the different sense of the Amazonian rainforest and its deforestation, are essential to the balance for the rest of us. It's extraordinary. I mean, somebody was talking, I think, on Al Jazeera last night about the fact that, where was it? One of the Central African countries with a vast acreage of forest is essential not only locally but globally. And you have to get your head around this, the fact that the interdependency of cultures
Well,
is
yeah.
palpably a thing, isn't it? With
Well,
weather systems changing, of course. Yeah.
that relates to farming. If all the half the farmers stopped ploughing, the root growth would absorb 32 billion tons of CO2 per year, which and we put about 40 billion tons into the atmosphere.
But for that to happen, you'd have to subsidize farmers, wouldn't you? On said Al Jazeera, there was a reference to the fact that trillions are needed to stabilize the third world countries who are taking the brunt of climate change to take concerted action of this nature.
No, you can make more money if you don't plough. This is the blue-green message.
A message literally
One
conservation of the
blue-green.
land, in fact.
Yeah, there's a blue-green farmer in America going around persuading every farmer, and he puts his own farm on the table and says, "Well, if I can't make your farm richer by stopping ploughing, then I can have my farm."
So presumably he demonstrates the model alongside.
Yeah. In the video, there's he's standing at the junction of his farm and his neighbour, and his neighbour is sparse and bare, and his is lush and green.
There's a message in there somewhere that the boondocks will absorb. I mean, some people say that's where the wisdom of America is. I wanted to ask you about where the blue-green movement has got to in its fascinating constitution and diversity. Perhaps we could come back to that in a bit. Leone, good morning. How are you? Just quickly washing her hair, I think. Oh, good
No,
morning.
on mute. On mute.
Well, I could, I Mr. Schrenners and I could hear you distantly afar intoning. So, welcome. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you? Been a busy, busy week, so.
Oh, blimey. Perhaps you could tell us a bit more about that. Well, I'm
Okay.
evading the snuffles just about. It is pretty freezing out there, clearly. So, I'm sort of
Ooh.
stiffening the sinews for that. Tell me about the business.
Oh, it's just been a lot of work at City Hall. That's the main thing. I've had we have these big committees that take a long time. They're all sort of 3-hour meetings. And I had the fire committee on Tuesday. I had the police and crime committee on Wednesday, followed by the environment committee in the
Backed
afternoon.
by popular demand. Well, that would have been all right, wouldn't it? I mean, that's very
Yeah.
much your turf. Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's just doing it on the same day as police and crime is quite a thing. And then yesterday we had one of our marathon meetings where we did it's a plenary session, so we're all there, not just the members of a committee. And we had the housing and planning plenary session with the two deputy mayors in the morning, and then we spent the afternoon debating motions. So, and we had 10 motions to debate, so it's been very full on, a
It's
very
parliamentary. I mean,
Yeah.
hearty commendations, I would say, to anybody with that degree of stamina.
Well, it's like being a member of several select committees.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of accomplishment after this? Is there also a sense in which the year is being brought to a close, as it were, and any ogres of what we might be expecting to be announced next year?
Well, of course, a lot of what happened in the budget was being debated. That kind of crosses over into what we're discussing. And yes, these are our sort of December meetings. So no, quite a few of them are ongoing, in-depth investigations. So not particularly a sense of closure. We're doing a big investigation into the impact of contaminants on firefighters across a couple of meetings, and we're doing site visits as well. So that didn't feel as though it was the end of that, because we were having another meeting on that topic in January. And the same with the Environment Committee. We're doing an in-depth look into heat networks, which of course people have been talking about. And saying that there's going to be lots of them, but so far there aren't. And the government is actually just about to launch its outlines for heat network zoning. And the Police and Crime Committee is doing an in-depth investigation into violence against women and girls on the transport system. So that's not finished. But we also made a decision in Wednesday morning's meeting to summons the mayor, the deputy mayor, and a load of paperwork. And we're now having an extra meeting to talk about the estate strategy, the strategy for police stations, and all the stuff that the police force own in terms of its property. So we've summoned all of that, and we're having an extra meeting to look into that and ask some extra questions about that matter.
Well, I mean, it's really good to know what's going on. There's been talk, for example, of a lack of transparency over Thames Water, which I'm sure has crossed your yardarms on a regular basis, and the fact
It
that indeed, I don't know if you've actually had you've had conclave with their chair in recent months, I think, haven't you?
We oh yeah no we've done actually the last meeting we had some people from Thames Water came in specifically about the reservoir, which they call SESRO, the Southeast Strategic Reservoir Option. So it has a nice acronym, SESRO. To everyone else, it's the Abingdon Reservoir. So it's the one that they've been talking about building near Abingdon in Oxfordshire.
With the NIMBY factor presumably attendant there, or need some people who commute into London who'll bring bottled water in great quantity.
No, this is going to be, if they go ahead with it, which does seem very likely because the government has now announced that they're supporting it, so it probably will actually finally start to proceed a bit faster. It will d deal with the impact of climate change, and the fact that water obviously evaporates as the temperature rises, so it's having a quite a serious impact on rivers. So the reservoir would be able to top up quite a lot of the rivers. Rather than having them all go down to zero flow, which is obviously a bit awkward if you're a fish or something else that
Indeed,
is trying to live in a river. But then that will also allow extraction for the water to be used for drinking water, not just in London. This is why it's called the Southeast Reservoir Option, but it would also supply various parts of Hampshire and stuff like that as well.
Will there be outboard motors for if the affected fish?
I mean, we are so far down the line now in terms of the appalling treatment of our rivers.
It's
Farmers,
abuse, really, isn't it? I think in the view of many people.
but farmers, if only they all would move to some form of sustainable land use rather
As
than,
Graham was alluding to there.
yeah, exactly, which is what you were talking about earlier, because the amount of filth that goes into the rivers from farmers' runoff is just unbelievable. So that's a huge problem. And then the fact that farmers and others are extracting water all the time. And then of course the water is evaporating, and the aquifers are also being mined of water as well. So it's all really not a good place.
I mean, the talk in the financial press this week is about Thames Water having to delay or reconfigure its attempt to borrow more money in order to pay its shareholders. I've heard some praise this week in counterbalance of some of its local actions in places like Battersea, just for getting stuff done. But it's perhaps the exception that proves the rule, in that the estate, as it were, of our water culture in the city, notwithstanding the Aberdeen Reservoir proposed investment, it is woefully neglected. So if you were a motorist in London or commuting across boroughs, as I think a number of us do, including myself, you are beset with traffic diversions on a major scale that seem uncoordinated in themselves, disruptive, and if not entirely safe, perhaps potentially. So there's a lot going on here, and I think that there is this creeping sense in which Thames Water could finally be renationalised or put in special measures, which, and as for the Aberdeen Reservoir, somebody has to pay for.
Which is why the government is not especially keen on that option, for the obvious reason that, the discussion about where does the money come from, and who is Rachel Reeves going to clobber in terms of taxes, has dominated the political discourse for about the last 4 or 5 months. So they're quite keen, for things to sort of, continue and for Thames Water to sort itself out. I mean, bizarrely, the two things that were said about Thames Water is that it's gone back into profit. Well, that's because it's put everybody's bills up from April. So
It's about to do so again, I think.
there's more cash started to come in from its, I don't know, is it 16 million customers? It's got a huge customer base because
It's
it's,
a monopoly, isn't it? Yeah, it would be.
well, yes, it is a monopoly. It's not like you can have six sets of water pipes coming to your house and then say, who shall I get my water from? No, you get your water from Thames Water. End of story. So they've put everyone's bills up by quite a substantial amount. So they are bringing in more cash into their operations. But at the same time, they do still have, they are Manchester United, effectively. So they are now piled up with this massive set of debts. So and of course, for a period of time that they were paying massive dividends to the shareholders rather than what they should have been doing, which was investing in improving the pipes. So the reason why there are so many problems with them digging up the road is there's emergency waterworks literally everywhere. Because pipes are just bursting all the time. And that's not even in the winter period, which of course is the time when pipes tend to have the worst problems, particularly when we get down to freezing, which we just have overnight, because when water freezes, it expands. And then when it thaws, of course, it's, cracks have appeared. So they're busy trying to replace many, many pipes. Many old pipes, pipes that were thrown into the trenches off the back of horse and carts, literally, when they were first laid. Many of these water pipes go back well over 100 years, when we were first putting pipe water into London, so that we could have the amazing system underground that we do. But of course, they do need to be replaced, especially all these big giant ring mains, and that's very disruptive. So people don't like the disruption, but they also don't like having water leaks everywhere.
And
So,
indeed, these humongous bills,
yeah.
and some of this work, as you say, is sort of decades in arrears. Graham, what happens to people's environmental consciousness when they are confronted with the dysfunction that is Thames Water and its ilk?
Yeah, that's why Thames Water is the archetypal corporate fraud on the public. They have a monopoly, and they give all the money to the investors and invest in useless projects like the Thames Tunnel to take all the money off the poor and then put up the bill, and they carry on the fraud. I mean, and they're now 20 billion in debt over
So
much of.
your thesis is, for example, with Tideway, and of course there are other opinions about the sources of was a concerted legal argument that ran aground, at least for now, that this dysfunctional approach is deliberate in order to maximize profit,
It's creating the
short-term
funnel.
profit.
It's creating a funnel from the poor to the rich. So the investors get super rich, and the poor get poorer. And the poor level is rising through the middle classes. So the inequality is increasing. So But as far as the case goes, I mean, as it's fraud, there's no time limit on it. I mean, and the government can re recover the money from Thames Water, the banks, anytime they like, if they just take them to court and demand the money back because it's fraud.
I suppose effectively it will be our money that's paying for that court action, but I wonder if this isn't on the
Well, yeah.
cards.
But you get
But it's
20%.
you either put it you either pay the bill or you and or you pay the bill and you go to court.
Yeah, but this is the profit of going to court. I mean, they should recover the money that has been stolen from the public.
I'd like Leonie, I'd like you to come back on that, please. But also, perhaps in the context, and apologies, this is a diversion, but I think we should talk a little bit about the inaugural conference of your party, which I suppose is amongst other places a venue in which people can voice their concern about what's happened to privatisation. Good idea as it seemed at the time, but perhaps Thames Water is a test case, and we haven't got any policies from them yet. But is this likely to be, perhaps along with the Greens, a crucible or focus for public disquiet over where we've got to with elements in society like Thames Water?
You mean the Jeremy Corbyn Zara Sultana
I do.
clash of the egos party?
Well, there appears to be an element of that, doesn't there? Or at least a owned, I suppose, certainly by Corbyn, lack of coordination. There's also the, what is it called, the Workers' Revolutionary Party, is it? The Judean People's Popular Front, who appear to have been a significant putative caucus, now banned, I think, from the auditorium.
I don't think it was the it is a bit Judean Workers' Front. I don't think it was the WRP.
It's the other lot, wasn't
I
it?
thought it was the SWP.
Yeah.
I thought it was the Socialist Workers' Party
You're quite right. Thank you for correcting me, and apologies for the other guys.
rather than
Yeah.
the Workers' Revolutionary Party.
Prop Vanessa Redgrave as well.
Yes, that's right. For that was the Vanessa Redgrave of the staring blue eyes party.
Oh, be still my beating heart.
As
Anyway.
opposed to the SWP, who are sort of like a kind of, I don't know, they're like a little virus that gets everywhere. Every time there's a march, they show up, and they're everywhere. They're ubiquitous. But for some reason, Zara Sultana wanted them in, so that people who were in the SWP could also be in your party, and Jeremy Corbyn didn't. And so the conference took a vote and decided to exclude them, I believe, so you couldn't be a member of both the SWP and involved in your party. And so Zara Sultana then boycotted the Saturday and refused to participate in this new launching weekend. And she and Jeremy on the Friday night, she and Jeremy held different rallies, so you could choose which one of the egos you went to visit. And then I believe on the Sunday, maybe the people there were fed up with all this egotistical "I'm more important than you are" nonsense that had been going on, so they voted not to have a leader.
I was going to say collective leadership, which was Corbyn's option, I think. He also said, I think somewhat wearily to Owen Jones, that he's looking to step back once the thing is up and running. Graham, again, from a design point of view, given human fallibility, is this going to be a focus for voices that cannot be heard elsewhere, but are clearly quite voluble? And In the Guardian, I think an op-ed this morning that says don't write them off yet, it's very early days. But Leone seems to be implying that it's tarnished with the tropes of traditional politics and the battle of the egos and so forth, which is apparently seeking not to be. But is this inevitable?
Well, I think there's always been these little groups working out different ideologies.
Yeah.
I remember from the 60s, a
That's
lot of
a
the same,
classic comparison of, yes, very relevant one, I would say. Yeah.
the same parties. And it's kind of interesting just to compare all the different ideologies, and because they don't have a solution, that's the problem. And solutions have been shown not to work, just like the far right. Now Nigel Farage's party is getting into government. They're demonstrating that they can't organize. They don't have the power that they thought they would have, and so they can't operate. So hopefully, it's going to sink into the public consciousness that. The Farage is bad for the economy.
Do you see a difference in terms of where Farage is going and where your party is going by design? I mean, clearly, both it's claimed that the wheels are coming off the your party bus at a very early stage. But as you say, Farage's core competence and the core organisation regionally that your party is now, I think, is the next step looking to set up. It's that crucial moment, really, is that who are your wing persons?
Yeah, well, I think they'll be on the wing, and people drift back to the Labour.
Do you think?
Well, I mean, it's the right-wing press that are dreaming up all these fantasies about the Labour Party. It's incredible the way Laura Kunzberg attacked Rachel Reeves.
That's a disturbing thought on a Sunday morning, but yes, yeah.
The arguments to getting into the BBC, and the BBC are going along with Farage. It's horrendous.
Who's been rounding on the media, hasn't he, this morning about anti-Semitism? Again, this is something on which Mal has some searing opinions. But he's sort of rather biting the hand that feeds him, isn't he? And one of the things that strikes me is that, allegedly, I mean, he's never made a sort of great sort of a great issue out of this. The anti-Corbynism in terms of the overall spread of coverage and the suggesting that this is all a little bit amateur is built into the filter under which we look at these sorts of opinions. But to what extent are these voices that we don't or don't have as it were, a means of expression through what Labour is doing now? Leonie, could you comment on that? I mean, is the left being sidelined, ignored, or dismissed as immature without being given a fair hearing?
No, I don't think so. I mean, who else has come forward to speak on behalf of your party other than Sultana and Corbyn? I haven't heard anyone else being interviewed. I would imagine that they will also be suffering from a lack of cash, whereas Reform has also just hit the headlines this week because they've received a £9 million donation from one person.
Yeah,
So
that's
there's a
crucial. I mean,
So, so
nowhere
there's a,
near Minsk, of course.
so there's a, well, they've also jailed Nathan Gill, who used to lead the
The
Reform
Welsh country.
Party
Yes,
for being a Russian shill, as they say. So, I mean, there are clearly links with big business in America, because Farage has gone many times there. There are links with Russia. I mean, it's unclear exactly how independent Reform is when you hear things like their leader in Wales has been doing this for years and is now in jail. But I'm not close enough to it to know whether it's just him or many people in their party. It's impossible to say. But they definitely are raking in loads of money and getting loads of donations. I mean, Farage has always made a huge amount of money beyond his various different political roles. that he's held, because he was an MEP for years and years. And
Indeed, and something rather big in the city before that, yes.
so he's not exactly broke. And of course, an interesting one is, where did the money come from that bought the house in Clacton that is in his wife's name? But anyway, that's a distraction. But I mean, I've got no idea who the other spokespeople for your party might be. And at the moment, they don't seem to be cracking it. I would say that, the person who's, fought a campaign from last March until September to become the leader of the Green Party is Zach Polanski, who was missing all day yesterday, actually, from all everything we were doing in the assembly. But then he was on Question Time last night on BBC One, so I presume he must have been preparing for that. And he seems to have, September, October, November, seems to have got off to a flying start as the new leader of the Green Party, in a way that your party seems to be completely beset with infighting and problems. So, maybe there is something to be said for having a single leader who then starts to take a party by the scruff of its neck and take it places. But the Green Party, of course, which used to be the Ecology Party, has been around for decades. So he's also walked into a long existing entity. He hasn't had to just spend a whole weekend trying to agree a constitution and how it's going to run itself or anything like that.
With the to some extent in the full glare of the cameras, which wasn't the case, I think, in I think if I remember it was in Balham in 1995, when the people were sat around in a series of quality circles, as I think they were called at the time in management, and just beginning to thrash things out ever so, I would say, gingerly, but it seemed a little bit amateur in its early days. But you feel that the Green Party are looking like a serious opposition, a concerted opposition now.
Well, I think they're extending their appeal to people, and I think that, at least according to them, I have no proof one way or the other. They have doubled their membership in the last in the 3 months since Zach became leader. So they must be doing something right in terms of communicating to people why they should join the Green Party. The other thing is they have now got a much larger number, I think, of Green councillors across the whole of the country. And of course, they moved from having the lone voice that was Caroline Lucas, who was the only Green MP for from 2010 until 2024. I mean, she was there by herself as the single Green MP in Parliament, and they've now got four MPs. So they're obviously, and that predates Zach becoming the leader, clearly, because the general election was July 24, and he didn't come in until September of this year. So, they were on the move anyway, I think it would be fair to say.
And of course, one of the things that our colleagues in the mainstream press would say is that there's their potential coalition here. I mean, there are rumblings again about the Tories and Reform come the next election, which of course is quite a way off, but the locals aren't. And there have been these arrangements, haven't there? I think previously between the Greens and the Lib Dems, with sort of by-election calling here, anticipation mode, I suppose. Someone Mal's back with us next week, hopefully. So, I mean, it sounds, I mean, as you would expect, with your professional profile, the only that you and your colleagues in Labour are having a weather look at both of these new forces and assessing them accordingly. But
Well,
there's also, sorry,
the Labour hierarchy has been very much focused on the reform challenge, which I think is why, there's been a lot of prominence given to what the Home Secretary has been starting this consultation over changes to the immigration system, and so on and so forth. But I mean, that doesn't really appeal, those kind of changes, to the kind of people who might want to vote Labour, Liberal Democrat, or Green. So they do have a bit of a conundrum at national level, as to how to both meet a challenge from the right, the Tories or Reform, and to meet a challenge from the left, Liberal Democrats, Green. I'm not really sure I'm going to include your party in there yet, but potentially your party as well. So there is a challenge from both sides, and there is no doubt about it. The national Labour government and its leading figures are deeply unpopular. You can't disguise that.
So it's almost
And
damned
we've
if they do, damned if they don't.
well, they do need to sort themselves out. And the one thing that they have not been good at, that Zach Polanski of the Greens has been good at, and Nigel Farage in Reform has been good at, is communicating what they're about. Whereas the Labour government, if you ask people, what is the Labour government about? What is it for? Most people can't give you an answer.
There's an op-ed piece in the, sorry to interrupt you, in the Indy this morning about somebody with ADHD, which of course is,
Oh,
as these
sure.
things are very often, is all over the prescription diaspora. People are coming forward realizing they seem to have this thing, and there was a somewhat a drain on the exchequer. And Wes Streeting was accused by this person, notwithstanding the fact that these things go in waves, of not communicating hope. I suppose in the Obama sense of things, that people can, with these conditions, rather than being subject to the bean counters, can contribute to society with a little bit of help, not necessarily a vast amount.
Yeah, I'm pretty fed up with the amount of fuss that's being made about. I think Wes made a statement about overdiagnosis, and I think, or I don't think it is overdiagnosis, but I think, once people have been diagnosed as to, they operate. I mean, it's like I'm left-handed, right? So I live in a right-handed world, and it is a bloody nuisance. There are so many things that are just completely awkward and
I never
inconvenient.
knew that. Well, you can never be accused of being awkwardly only, but you have to do the
No,
work to come across to this the way the world's set up, don't you?
but the world I live in is awkward and inconvenient for me.
Yes.
Every time I try to use public transport, the Oyster card is on the wrong side, so I get my pass out of my left pocket with my left hand, and then I have to, put my arm across my chest to press something that's in a stupid place. As far as I'm concerned,
Yeah.
every day there are
I'm
hundreds.
saying Busby Berkeley in the background here and Rogers and Astaire, but anyway, yeah.
There are hundreds and hundreds of little annoyances like this
Yes,
all the
yeah.
time. Everything is designed for people who are right-handed. So I don't quite, find the world exactly shaped for me. So it's not easy, always easy to sort of navigate in that way. And, having ADHD or having, having a diagnosis that you are somewhere on the spectrum, which they don't use as an expression anymore, but
Don't
that
they?
you
Oh.
no, they
I better
don't.
get this right because I mean, I sort of work in social care by day and I still talk about the fact of
Well,
my research here.
apparently not, but
Yeah.
I mean, there are degrees of
Yeah.
autism, which is
Yeah.
why people started referring to it as being on the spectrum from very mild autism up.
Neurodiversity. Yeah. Yeah.
Being neurodiverse, it's the same thing that people find the world is not quite set up for them, that they come at it from a slightly different angle. But it doesn't mean to say that, I don't have a mental health problem because I'm left-handed. People who, have
Yeah.
ADHD or have are somewhere on the autistic spectrum, she said, using that terminology, is not necessarily a mental health problem. But having a diagnosis that that's you operate in a slightly different way, can be helpful for you then to understand why you approach things slightly differently from other people. It's like knowing why you're struggling at school, and then someone diagnoses you and says, actually, you're what's the word I'm looking for? You're dyslexic.
Yeah.
Dyslexia is not a mental health condition, but it's incredibly helpful to know that you have dyslexia.
Yeah, the
And
not knowing, I suppose, could create the mental health problem because you're in a state of
and that's
dysphoria, in a sense. Yeah.
exactly. So people
Yeah.
then start to suffer from mental health problems when they don't understand why they are how they are. So diagnosis is important. Then how you respond is very important as well, and can actually reduce the amount of people with mental health problems that
Now, there, I
result from
think, yeah.
undiagnosed. So
Yeah.
it's we but we seem to have got ourselves into this terrible tangle of sort of saying, oh, we can't, overdiagnose, and then people being over medicalized and all the rest of it. Because these aren't things that once you know that you've got these things, that's it, it's the end of the universe. You just learn to navigate the world in a more productive way because you understand what
Yeah.
makes you tick.
I felt your core response, the phrase there brilliantly aside was how you respond. So, in other words, what the dialogue is about these things. And of course, in employment law, you have reasonable adjustment, which seems to have been
Exactly.
working quite well. Now, I wonder if there's a metaphor here in terms of, we talked about your party just now, and how the Greens are perhaps getting this right. And Labour potentially isn't, in that someone like Streeting will stand up and opine, but may not necessarily be grounded or empathic with the culture that he is there to adumbrate or constructively criticise, one would hope. Can you see where I'm going with this, Graham? Am I making any sense? This idea that there is a certain mild tone deafness abroad at the moment that might, which might be causing political parties to suffer.
Well, I think Leonie's just described how the language is changing. You change ideology by changing the language. And they've used my work in a cover story of New Scientist this week.
Wonderful and good on them.
Well, it's
I've been accredited, I'm sure. Well, anyway.
it's a great photograph of walking on water in a transmobile.
This is down, you're doing your St. Catherine's Dock days, I remember from that wonderful film.
But they call the transmobile a causal bubble, because and this is a new quantum theory, which not it's not only a quantum theory, but it's resolving the contradiction between relativity and quantum mechanics,
Oh, fascinating.
by naming the bubble, the causal bubble. And it relates to all the work we did in structures. It's a structuralism advance, because the structure of the universe can be
As with so much of your work, it's visceral, isn't it? Because if, as a casual punter, if you embark on one of these structures, you are beginning to intuitively learn things about natural science.
It allows you to experience the sort of being in the bubble and experiencing the world through the skin of the bubble, and which is but you are in your own framework, if you like, and this is the theory that quantum mechanics can be explained by these bubbles of frameworks of causality,
It
which
might also challenge your own sense of your own being, I suppose, really doing this. It's kind of a it is a shock to the system in a good way, existentially.
Well, that's the importance of language. It's difficult to understand it to start with, but that's what all these little parties are doing. They're changing the language to try and get a solution. And Trump and the right wing just are using language which is understandable by the public, and so convincing the public. But it's just not true. That's the drawback.
Well, that's a secondary consideration, isn't it?
It's a
And it, I
fake
su
description of reality, you know. I
it,
mean, it's
it's image and reality, isn't it? I mean, and terms and conditions apply, so to speak. Sorry,
yeah,
you've
but
been a bit eviscerated here. This goes with the
in
territory.
the meantime, the corporations are advancing with the technology and building the quantum computers, which do understand the world, because the understanding of the world is an ideology in itself, and this is what Trump
Yes,
and Putin.
philosophy, in fact.
Things do come from ideas, how you think about things.
Leo, we rather ran with your. Sorry, Graham, do you want to finish your point there?
Well, I was just going to say the obvious thing is Putin has this idea that Russia is Ukraine.
And again, it's that reading of history linguistically and the banging of the jingoistic drum, isn't it?
Well,
That we are the chosen people, and we hear that elsewhere as well.
it's the interpretation of history, which is all the stories of the past. It's all in the language. I mean, he's got it wrong, and it's
So
tragic
yeah,
consequences.
no, this yeah, we rather sorry, I don't want to sound like I'm mansplaining here. We rather ran with this idea that you had about how people respond. What do you make of that? Is there something in this? Is there something wrong with, for example, not just them, I mean, the major parties' language in addressing people's concerns and the assumptions that they make.
I don't think it's necessarily just about the language. I think it's also about having a coherent story, and being able to tell it. And it doesn't seem that they don't quite seem to have mastered the art of avoiding banana skins, so that they can actually get on with telling the story. I mean, look at the aftermath of the budget. It was all about, has Rachel Reeves lied to us and lied to the country about her need to put taxes up,
And the
rather than
assumption that she might reasonably have wanted to do so.
her being able to tell the story that and what most Labour MPs wanted to talk about, I think, which was the fact that they'd all been saying to her, and she had now agreed to put get rid of the two-child benefit cap to bring huge, humongous numbers of children that are living in poverty out of poverty.
And in its
So,
quiet way, that's a fork in the road, isn't it? That's Labour being recognisably Labour, I suppose, traditionally, for many people.
yeah, but I mean, it's received almost no coverage or about the benefits, and it's actually quite unpopular with the public because people feel as though they're having to dig into their pocket to fund somebody else's children. It's as bald as that. A lot of people do feel that quite strongly. And whilst I think most people accept that we all age and get older, and that the state needs to look after us a bit more because our health declines a bit as we get older, it, obviously there are some, when you should still look after yourself, a bit, thoughts that go on with people as well. But nevertheless, no one has so far said that the National Health Service should withdraw its facilities from people who smoke or eat unhealthy food. There's a little bit of that, I think, about people who take drugs. Drug users are probably looked down upon. But there certainly is an attitude amongst many people that, well, you didn't need to have three, four, five, six children. Why did you do that? Why should we pay for the privilege of you deciding that you wanted to have too many children? Too many is in inverted commas there. So, that actually does need to have quite a lot of selling to explain exactly why. I know a lot of Labour people. Obviously, I know a lot of Labour people, and they're completely in favour of this because they think it's a matter of justice for the children who have no choice about which family they're born into. But the attitude from the people who are paying the additional taxes, it needs to be sold to people as to why they should.
But what I think you're very adroitly identifying is that there is a certain factionalism that's crept in here. The fact that rather than thinking in sort of intergenerational terms, there are seniors and there are kids. And societally, there isn't much truck between the two, is there? I mean, we live in times where this has been a social problem, a psychological problem. But at the same time, there's a disconnect there, isn't there? Which presumably is, as well as, of course, the as you say, that what happens in the media when Reeves makes an announcement like that. Excuse me.
There's also a huge disconnect, though. Although we have generally, I think, accepted that society needs to give more support to older people just because, they're less able to look after themselves. And also, once people retire, they can't find additional sources of income.
Well, if they can retire, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a problem, is that, retirement is something that is becoming a later and later in life events. So we've got older people struggling to work, and particularly, now we've got people who don't have a mortgage that gets paid off, and they've still got housing costs ongoing because they're still paying rent, because there's so many more people are still renting in the private sector, so they don't get rid of having to pay for their accommodation all the time. So I think we have accepted that we do need to look after older people, but at the same time, we've also massively underfund both adult social care and, the care for children who need quite a lot more attention. And that's the two parts of the Sit with local authorities, and local authorities as a whole are hugely underfunded. These are two of their statutory responsibilities and have now become the overwhelming part of their budgets, because there's been this huge squeeze on the finance that comes from government to local authorities. The way that we look after people who then need another level of adult social care is absolutely appalling. I mean, we leave people sitting at home in their houses waiting for somebody to show up to do a 15-minute care call, during the course of which they might help them to go to the toilet, but make a cup of tea, give them a sandwich, and then they run out. I
Yeah,
mean,
and that's
it's
the day. And of course, this is means tested. In most cases, some sort of a payment has to be made. Can be immensely valuable, but there's a huge gap there, isn't there? As you say,
there is. There
great.
is. And the people who do that work are paid a pittance.
And run ragged. Yes, I speak from
And they don't get paid from
colleagues'
running from,
experience.
they don't get paid anymore from running from one house to another. So these are terrible, terrible circumstances that we, and of course it's inside people's houses, so we can't really see it. And the people who've been running around doing this work, until Brexit happened, were mostly, from abroad as well.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that's a huge problem of reskilling. In my current field, recovery, there's mutual aid, which is an extremely powerful catalytic tool. It's not the only one. But I wonder, Graham, if there, if, as a design problem, this isn't part of the root of the general psychological discontent we hear about in op-eds from time to time, and how one might begin to address it. Is that do we have an attitude problem as a society now?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the whole thing is about attitude and values. As you're designing a society, that's what the political parties are doing, designing the society. And now with corporatism coming to the fore, corporates don't want to pay for all the education, the health and the housing of the workers they exploit. And that's they want to exploit them more and more. The tendency is for the exploitation to go up. There's always that tension between the worker and the employer.
So we're a long way from port sunlight there, aren't we? With that sense of a vocational investment,
Well,
however pragmatic.
that was a far more effective design, because poor people it can't perform and can't produce and can't be as productive as wealthy people. Wealthy people are far more productive than poor people.
Well, you would hope so, wouldn't you? Reluctantly, I've got to draw this to a close, but you both remind me of my former manager, John Cox's maxim, don't be disempowered. Thank you for such an empowering conversation. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Andy.
Cheers, bye.
Cheers,
Bye.
both. Bye.